call me anything.
Don't, or just
you
talk.
Call me anything you want, oh. I'll say, but not on, because again, I'm going to be eliminated. Yeah,
okay, this is neutral,
this is, huh? This is neutral. This is Barry Tyker of the Oral History Project. Today is the 17th of August, 1995, and I'm at the WHA studios with Elroy Hirsch, and we're going to talk first about his football career and then about his career as athletic director here at the University of Wisconsin. Let's start out, let's go way back. Let's talk about your high school career in Wausau and talk a little bit, if you will, about your coach, Win Brockmeyer.
Well, one of the greatest men I ever met, Win Brockmeyer. In fact, we named our son Win. That's what I thought of him. A very fine coach from Minnesota, and came into Wausau. Wausau had been the doormat of the conference up there for years. Brock came in and immediately turned it around and started winning. And I was very, very fortunate to play under him because he was a sound fundamental coach, the blocking, the tackling, all the things you need to go on to be a good football player.
What did you start out as a running back right away?
Oh, yes. Yeah, we played single wing, and I was always played a tailback. One thing I could always do was run fast, and because I was cowardly when I was a child, I ran away from everything, and to not fight, I ran. And I learned to run fast and learned to dodge. And when I went to high school, I couldn't make it my sophomore year. I wasn't big enough. I only weighed 125 pounds. But over that next year, I grew to 160, and I was one of the bigger guys, and fortunately retained the speed, still the fear, and became a halfback my junior and senior year.
When you finished high school, were you recruited? What schools recruited you?
Heavily by Wisconsin.
You have to give a sentence again.
Well, I was recruited by Wisconsin very heavily, naturally being in the state from Wausau, but my high school coach was Win Brockmeyer from Minnesota, and he had a little influence there, and I was torn between Minnesota or Wisconsin, but a group of businessmen in Wausau, a very prominent businessmen who were Wisconsin people, got a pool together and for my tuition and my room and board, and they sent me to school, so to speak. There were no scholarships in those days.
Talk briefly about your coach here at Wisconsin, Harry Stuhldreher. How tough was he? What kind of a coach was he?
A disciplinarian. Harry Stuhldreher was a very sound disciplinarian, but a fair one. He was tough on everyone. And we played the Notre Dame box, the old Notre Dame system, and which he had played with the Four Horsemen way back. And while the T-formation was just coming in then, and he wouldn't go to the T-formation. He stuck with what he knew. And luckily, we had very good personnel at almost every position. And it was a basic formation that properly blocking, proper tackling was successful. And we were successful under Harry.
Did you again start out as you played your whole career there as a running back?
Oh, yes. I was a left halfback here. Then when the war came, we all joined the Marine Corps. We were advised by our military advisor on the campus to join the V-12 program. The V-12 unit, which we joined, was sent to Michigan. And then we were allowed to play sports over there while we were there. And we all played for Fritz Kreisler. And so I played halfback there. And he had the spinning fullback system, much different than the Notre Dame box. Notre Dame box is kind of a straightforward system, whereas Chrysler system was a spinning fullback and a lot of misdirection and trying to fool the other guy too, although it was a basic strong single wing pattern when it started out. But playing under those two coaches was a great experience.
I want to go back to Wisconsin in a second, but how did it feel playing for Michigan against Wisconsin?
Well, Coach Chrysler, when we played that game, when Michigan had Wisconsin scheduled in 1943. We were all in uniform, in Marine Corps uniform, V-12 program, at Michigan. And we had Wisconsin scheduled. And Chrysler called us all together and said, you do not have to play in this game if you don't want to. You know, it's your old school, and I can understand your feeling, and there'll be no hard feelings if you choose not to play. We were all chomping at the bit, of course. We wanted to get at them.
How many other people from Wisconsin were on the Michigan team?
We had 7 football players on the Michigan team from Wisconsin.
Oh. Getting back to Wisconsin.
Those are just starters, and we had 11 overall.
The thing about the Marine Corps going to Michigan, you didn't know that when you joined the Marines, did you, that you were going to be going to Michigan?
No, we had a military advisor on the campus, and he advised us to join the V-12 program, and the theory there was because it would give us another year of school, of college. They weren't going to call those Marines up. It was designed, because you were a college student, they felt you were officer material, and because you were in athletics. And the backlog at Parris Island, which is the boot camp, and officer training up at Quantico, Virginia, had such a backlog that we stayed in school. So they sent us to Michigan for a year. Rather, the boot camps were all full. So Michigan got a V-12 unit, and so we stayed there for one semester. Then it was still overloaded. We stayed there for a second semester, and still overloaded, and stayed there for a third semester. Quite a break for us. And then we went to boot camp at Parris Island and on to OCS at Quantico.
When you were at Wisconsin, let's go back to Wisconsin now. Did you, today, you look at Barry Alvarez's athletes, and they're always pumping iron, and they're gaining 60 pounds in 2 years. At Wisconsin, did you have weight training programs, things like that?
No, the theory then, you became muscle-bound if you lifted weights. You wanted everybody agile and quick, and strength didn't enter into it as much. Our tackles were 210, 220. Now, you know, of course, they're way over that. But we did not have a weight room, per se.
That's interesting. Talk about a few of your teammates on Wisconsin team. Any that stand out in your mind?
Our teammates at Wisconsin?
Yeah.
Well, number one, Dave Schreiner, great All-American end, who unfortunately was killed in Okinawa. And Mark Hoskins, also from Lancaster, a great right halfback. Pat Harder, all-time fullback with the Chicago Cardinals later on. And Fred Nagus, an All-American center. And we had good, solid linemen all the way through and good backs. It was a team that came together. We had a lot of seniors and a lot of sophomores and seemed to gel at the same time. And Harry Schuler, a good sound coach, although we played the Notre Dame box, which was just becoming kind of outmoded at that time. The T formation was coming in. But it was a good fundamental formation, and it called for a lot of good blocking, which these guys provided me.
Are there any games, Wisconsin games, that really stand out in your mind as spectacular?
One I'll never forget is we're on our way to the all-time championship at Big Ten, and we're undefeated, and we go down to Iowa, and we're ready to just sweep through the Big Ten. I think we're a little big-headed, and we couldn't get buses for some reason, and we had a car caravan driving to Iowa City, which took forever. You can only go 35 miles an hour, and there was gas rationing, and the citizens pooled their gas rations to get us down there. And we had about a 25-30 car caravan go to Iowa City for the game. But we lost down there, 6-7 to nothing. And that was a big, big blow to us because we were on our way to the national championship. But I'll never forget that loss ever.
So Iowa has been a thorn in our sights for a long time.
It was at least a 600-mile ride home, too.
At 35 miles an hour. When did you start to realize that you might get a shot at pro ball?
Well, I was in the Marine Corps and playing for the El Toro Marines. And our coach there was Dick Hanley, a former Northwestern coach. And he was coaching the El Toro Marines. And then this new league formed, the All-America Conference, in addition to the National League, Pro League. And Dick Hanley was going to coach the Chicago Rockets in this new league. And therefore, playing for the El Toro Marines for him, he brought a lot of the Marines into that first year with the Chicago Rockets. So that's how I got into pro ball. It was either that or go to an occupational force in Tientsin, China. I took the Rockets.
Why did you select number 40?
It was given to me. I didn't have
say
it.
That in a sentence.
I didn't have it in high school, but number 40 was issued to me at Wisconsin, and that's how I got it. I didn't select it by any means, and it wasn't lucky for any reason way back. But from that point on, yes, I over in Michigan I asked for it, and when I played in the service I asked for 40, and when I went pro I asked for 40, even though I was an end. And I was supposed to be in the 80s. At first they let me wear 40, but then they said, hey, the numbering system, you've got to be an 80 to be an end. So I took 80 because it was two 40s.
Well, just so you know, your interview, I gave you number 440 for your
Thank you.
Number 440, just to be consistent. And let's get this on the record. How did you get the name Crazy Legs?
My left foot points out farther than my right when I run. And when I take that step, the toe points out, and when the foot comes back behind my body, and when running, it goes behind my body, and I have to swing it way out and around to get it in front of me again. It's a natural movement to me. People just notice it. And I wobble when I run. I was never a sprinter. I could never run the 100-yard dash because I could run the first 30, 40 yards quick in a straight line, but then I start to wobble from side to side, and I lose the speed. But that's the reason. And a sports writer in Chicago, Chicago Daily News, I got off a run of 40 or 50 yards against Great Lakes that year in 42, and he saw the wobbling of the legs, and he said, the guy's got crazy legs, and that's what stuck. Anything's better than Elroy.
Okay, we talked about your Michigan career. Let's go. We'll skip your pro career. If we have a little time at the end, I might ask you one or two questions about that. But let's focus on Wisconsin. Why did you leave your job as general manager of the LA Rams in warm, sunny Los Angeles, which at that time didn't have the smog and the pollution problems that it has now? Why did you leave that job to come to the athletic director at this tundra of the north?
The owner of the Rams, Daniel Reeves, the original owner who moved them from Cleveland to Los Angeles, was severely ill, and it looked very bad for him. And he called me in one day and said, I'm not going to be around much longer, and this Wisconsin job is there for your taking. And he said, I would advise you to take it, because this club is going to be sold, and who knows what happens to whom, or if it's going to be moved or whatever. So I just took his advice, and I was very lucky. The Wisconsin job opened the same time all this happened, and I've never been sorry for it. Although the Wisconsin winters are different than Los Angeles.
Having spent a year in California, I know what you're talking about. When you came here, one thing that I believe it might have been a surprise to you that you inherited or you weren't fully aware of was the sizable deficit in the athletic program. Tell us how you learned about that and how you managed to do such an excellent job of retiring that.
Well, after I took the job and started going over everything with the faculty representatives and the athletic board, I found out we were $200,000 in debt, and it was kind of a shock. But the big thing is the people here wanted a good athletic program, both the faculty and students, and we went on a campaign of fundraising, tried to take money away painlessly, for instance, golf outings and gatherings and dinners and that sort of thing. And that's how we just gradually ate away at the deficit. Then also the team got better and the crowds started picking up. The way to make that deficit back was not by little fundraising around dinners and that sort of thing. The way right on that football field is where, and the basketball court. And we had a third income sport, hockey, which was our second biggest income sport and was going very well. So with all those together and football coming back to the big crowds, we ate away and did away with the deficit. A lot of people helped.
Let's put the football program. That's the number one program here, as it is in so many college campuses. Let's talk about the football program here during your 19 years as athletic director. What were some of the highs and lows that you experienced in your career here?
Well, I played in 1942 with a very good football team, and we were on our way to an undefeated season and all the hullabaloo that went with it. And we'd just beaten Ohio State, number one team in the country. And the next week, we go down to Iowa. And we couldn't get buses in those days because of gas rationing. And people pooled their gas coupons, and we had a car caravan to go to Iowa City. Long, long trail of cars down there, and only 35 miles an hour, which was the law during the war years. And it took us forever to get down there. And I don't mean this as an excuse, because we got beat on the field. And we got beat 6-0, and it was a real shocker. The longest ride I've ever had in a car home in my life. And we recovered from it and won the next games. But that was the low point of all the football I played. That was the low point.
What about your years as athletic director? You had some highs and lows there. I certainly coached the death of Coach McClain would
have been
there. Could you talk about those for
a moment? Dave came in and just did a magnificent job with this
Dave
ball
McClain,
club. Dave McClain came in and did an outstanding job with the team, and we were a winning program again. And his passing away was a tremendous blow. It takes a while to recover from that, and all of us were in shock, because it just happened so out of the blue. And then we had to appoint a coach right away. There was no time to search because the season was on us. And we appointed an assistant, and that didn't work out, but it gave us time to search for another coach.
Let's talk for a minute about the non-income sports. How did they fare during your years as athletic director here?
We were always very, very good in track, and good in swimming, and a good baseball team under Dinah Mansfield. And the trouble is they got to travel more after the war, and that eats up a lot of money, and there's no income from all this work. And then Title IX came in, women's athletics, and they deserved the right to have a good athletic program. But the administration just said to the athletic department, the men's, and said, it's yours to finance. Now, where'd this money come from? Out of the income that was just coming in. And they were up there in six figures, very good. You know, they had men had a basketball team, women had a basketball team. That means travel on the road. That's expensive travel. And the same way with all the other sports. They had everything except football, basically, and hockey. And it's a very expensive program. And it all came out of what the income that was being generated by football and basketball and hockey.
Do you ever feel like you had one too many orange on
the Yes, many times.
Let's talk just for a moment about the women's athletic program. Are there any particular women athletes that you recall from the UW, from your career here at UW?
Not right offhand. I do admire Kit Saunders, who was a women's athletic director. She did a marvelous job. She cooperated with us. She was very, very good and worked awfully hard at it. And you got to give her a big pat on the back for what it is today.
You also have another support system going on over in from the music school in the form of the UW Marching Band.
Oh.
Mike LaCrone. Talk about Mike LaCrone and the UW Marching Band, please.
Mike LaCrone is one of the all-time great characters I've ever met on the field. He knows how to play a crowd. He's a great musician in his own right, and he's a great band director. And he has spirit among that band, which I love. And he knows how to take care of a crowd. He just gets the crowd in the palm of his hand, and they go crazy out there for him. And many times, that's all the people had to come to watch the way our football teams play. They wait for the pregame and halftime and postgame shows, and at least they'd go away somewhat happy, even after a losing game. But no, I owe Mike LaCrone a great, great deal, because he's a great entrepreneur and a great showman and knows his music.
That's wonderful. I know that I used to go during the losing seasons, and everybody just couldn't wait for that third quarter and halftime and everything.
And the postgame show, you know, was always big.
You mentioned hockey before. Talk about Bob Johnson for a moment, if you would.
Badger Bob, I don't think there'll ever be another like him. He was just a fantastic hockey coach and a great person along with it. He had one thought in mind, and that was to have a winning hockey program, and a great guy that fit into the overall program. Good on his feet, could talk, and a great PR man, a good recruiter, and never lost the perspective of where a sport should be in the overall collegiate program. He believed in academics, and just one heck of a guy. He was one coach that stood out among all those I've known in all those categories.
Before we get to some specific particular athletes, talk a little bit about the fans and the University of Wisconsin fan.
Well, they're great.
The
fans are absolutely super, I think, as good as anywhere in the country. Of course, I played a lot of pro ball in Los Angeles, and that's a mixture of people. You know, they aren't born and raised Ram fans. They come in from all over the country. Whereas here, Wisconsin people just... they are all for the Badgers, you know. Now, we used to play Marquette, and that was a little separation. But those fans pack the stadium, and they come not only, I think, for the game, but they come to have a good time the day of the game. And you look at the tailgating, both prior to and after the game, and the cheering and the wearing of the red in the stands. And I just think it's one of the most enjoyable days for a sports fan that can possibly be. And Wisconsin fans are super loyal. I take my hat off to them.
Well, I've brought friends from other cities here to Madison, and when they go to a football game, they just can't believe what they're seeing in terms of fan support.
That's right. I've heard that many times, and say, what do you do up there to get those people so excited? It's the people. They're just great people.
I'm going to give you some names of particular athletes, and if you could just talk for a couple of sentences or however much you want to about them. Let's start out with Rufus Ferguson.
Rufus came in at a time. Rufus Ferguson came in at a time where we needed a shot in the arm, something to excite the program and bring the people in. And he was it. He was a tremendous attraction. You know, his little runny style. Of course, he's a little fellow. I mean, short, but well built. But he had this running style, and he could break a tackle, and he was exciting to watch. And with his size and his running style, he just captured the audience. And I think he's largely responsible, and a big part responsible, for bringing the people back into the stands.
Let's talk about another short guy, powerfully built, Billy Merrick.
Well, Billy Merrick, he was a fullback in a halfback's body, I think. A tough runner, could shed a tackler, a great third and one guy. Didn't have the blinding speed that most halfbacks are required to have, but a very intelligent runner and a tough runner. Never fumbled, and he could carry the ball 20, 30 times a game, and as good on the 30th carry as he was on the first. He was great stamina.
Yeah, all-time rushing leader for Wisconsin.
Oh, yes, yes.
He proved it on the field. Let's stay in football a few more minutes. What about Tim Crumry?
Well, Timmy was... Tim Crumry was probably the first, in my time, was the first outstanding lineman we had since the pre-war days. And tough guy. And played there in that middle of that defensive line and just couldn't be moved. He was like a fire hydrant, you know, running into it. And he was built like a box and great weightlifter and trained all the time. But the thing he liked about Timmy, he was not a great big guy, as linemen go, but heart. He had a heart as big as his whole body, and his desire lifted him above most of the other athletes he played against.
Al Toon?
Well, Al Toon was I always thought of him as a great pro end. I always said, boy, if I ever have a pro team, I want to end like Al Toon out there. He's good speed, very good speed, and tremendous hands, and he had this deceptive speed. He could run, and you'd swear he was running half speed, but he'd go by you with that lope that he had. Very smooth, and one of these guys that made catching a football so easy, looked so easy, at least. Now, he was a great one. I was hoping he'd go out into pro ball and play 10 years.
Yeah, he reminds me a little bit of James Lofton, just that real easy
gait. Yes.
And he somehow manages to cover 40 yards in no time at
all. That's right.
This
he doesn't look like he's running real fast, but it's a lope kind of, and it covers a lot of ground. And his catches were effortless. You know, he accepted the ball. He didn't fight it and grab for it. He's just a good receiver.
Now, we recruited him from Virginia, as I recall, and he moved to Madison permanently, didn't he?
Yes. Yeah. He's still in the area.
Yeah.
Yes.
Let's go to basketball for just a minute. How about Wes Matthews?
Well, I'm not an expert on basketball. I played in high school and in college, but Wes Matthews was the heart of the team, or the thing that made it go, the heart, the works that made it click. And good scorer, good shot from outside, and great ball handler, but a leader. And that's what you need when you only got five guys out there. One guy can take charge and make it go.
One of the names Jim Mott gave me to ask you about was the Hughes twins.
Oh, yes. Well, it was unusual to have two guys that size. They were both very tall and two big, good-looking guys and ideal athletes. Just great trainers, always worked very hard. And it was a novelty to come out and for the people to see two guys look exactly alike and play alike. They were a novel group.
First names again?
That's a good question.
Kim and Carrie.
Yeah.
Kim and Carrie, that's it. Looking back on your years as athletic director here at the university, you were here 19 years, that's a long time.
Yes.
What do you consider your major accomplishment?
Well, when we came, we were something like $200,000 in debt, and the big thing, the athletic facilities were just run down terribly. And we went on a big project of refurbishing all them. We put a new floor in the field house. We put a new roof on the field house, which was leaking badly. We redid all the locker rooms. We put a new artificial surface on the floor of the stadium. We rebuilt the press box. We redid all the seats, which are boards, and they were rotting and slivers and things. We replaced the planking where it was necessary and covered them all with plastic. We built a new ticket office. We built entirely new football locker rooms for both the visiting team and the home team. Weight training room, we didn't have that. We supplied a weight training room with all the equipment in it. And I don't say me. I'm talking about an awful lot of people took part in this and cooperated with it. A lot of things had to be done. So we went out, and the people responded and did it.
One person we haven't mentioned, athlete and now current administrator, is Pat Richter. Could you say a few things about Pat?
Well, Pat's one of the finest people I've ever met, Pat Richter. One of the finest people I've ever met, and a very fine administrator. He was, of course, an executive over with the Oscar Mayer people over here in town, and had always been a great athlete. I admired him as a baseball player here when I was in school, and watched him play in the City League. And, of course, he could play basketball. He's a track man, and just a great all-around athlete. On top of that, he's one of the finest people you ever want to meet. And a great guy to be around. And I was glad to see him get this job, and he's doing a very fine job.
Talk for a second about Jim Mott and the job he did.
Well, Jim's a one in a million. Jim Mott is a one in a million guy. He's a walking encyclopedia about Wisconsin. You ask him anything, and he'll say, oh, yeah, that was 1932, and there was Jim Jones and Bill Smith and et cetera. He's amazing, and has always been that way. And I've never seen a man in that job more dedicated to his job. You know, 18, 20 hours a day. He was attended everything. He knew everybody, and he had it all stored. He was like a computer.
We interviewed him in this very room, I believe, several months ago, and I don't think I've ever been as astonished during an interview. I mean, he could tell you the scores of the—you just name the game of the year, and he'll tell
yep.
you, he'll give you a whole description.
Yeah, that's right, and very reluctant to talk about himself.
Yeah.
Very shy that way.
He sure knows his job. What do you see as the future of Badger Athletics?
Oh, I think it's going to remain strong. A lot depends on the administration. Do they want a good athletic program here? Do they want it to be important? And I think they all do. And, it doesn't mean you're a jock school if you've got a winning football program and a winning basketball program and a winning hockey. It means you're a good school and you're well-rounded. And I think all those sports supply a lot of enthusiasm for the student body and faculty in general. And make the campus a much happier place to be. If they're all losing, you know, then everybody goes down. They're down on you, and they're all complaining. And the Daily Cardinal takes swatches at you, and so do the Cap Times and the Wisconsin State Journal. But when you're successful and winning, everybody's happy on a high note. It seems like, and things get done easier. Even in our state legislature, when you have a good football team and basketball team, it's a lot easier to go up and talk with them.
Describe your feelings in the last minute and a half of the Rose Bowl a few years ago and after the Badgers won the game.
Well, I was hysterical. I wanted to get down on the field, so I didn't see the last minute or two. And I left and wanted to go down, and it took me a while to get there. A lot of people were doing that. And if you know the Rose Bowl, it's a very old bowl. There's no elevators all over the place and that sort of thing. You have to walk down. And everybody had the same idea I did, I guess. And it took me a long time to get there, but just to win the Rose Bowl, and that's the epitome of collegiate football. It's the granddaddy of them all, and know how happy that. And then you know you're going to come home to a happy campus, you know, and have a good year.
You bet. That was such a cold week that was played in Wisconsin, and I don't think one person in Wisconsin minded the cold at all. Any predictions you want to make? We'll put it on tape here and play it back at the end of the season about this year's Badger football team.
I think they're a good, sound football team. We've got a good coaching staff, and they recruit well. The thing is, I don't know. I'm on the outside looking in now, so to speak. Not about our team so much, but I don't know the conference. Sure, the Michigans are always going to be good and so on. But I don't know the strength of the conference. But I will say, knowing Barry Alvarez and his staff and how he's recruited and how he coaches, he's going to be competitive in every game. And there's not going to be like it used to be years ago when you say, well, they're, we can't beat so-and-so. We can't beat this one, but we can beat so-and-so. And I think they go into every game knowing they've got a good shot at winning.
West Virginia, he was an existing coach. We had someone who had a proven coach, existing program, versus an assistant coach who had been at highly successful programs. And it really was, I think we have a philosophy that when you get into someone who is, that's their first chance out of the block, so to speak, here's a chance for them to be their, to be the coach. There's a tremendous motivation to be successful. They work very hard because if they're not successful, that may be it. That may be the last chance they get. And so in that sense, you feel very comfortable with someone like Barry, an assistant coach. He knew what he wanted to do. He knew some of the people he was going to bring with him. He was very well prepared for the job.
He's done a fairly good job.
Yes.